What?
Blog Talk Radio.
I just heard a beat. 5, 4, 3.
Welcome to All About Wine, featuring Ron, winemaker, cellar master, vineyardist, and tasting expert with Florida Estates Winery.
Labels themselves, they become an art form.
We encourage listeners, wine enthusiasts, and winemakers to call the show and discuss topics related to wine.
This is Stuart Scott from Camas Prairie Winery.
Dial area code 646-727-3235. That's 646-727-3235.
We have a variety of different sizes of bottles that are available.
Always informative and entertaining.
Basically, what we're trying to do on this program is just trying to educate people and trying to make wine less confusing and more friendly.
It's all about wine.
So, Alabama.
And now, from Florida Estates Winery, Ron.
It's just gorgeous weather, up to almost 80 today. And Mike, you are setting where?
I am I'm in the Traverse City, Michigan area because we are going to get to Michigan sometime this evening and I believe next week because there's a lot to cover in Michigan. But right now it is currently, let me check out the window here. It is cloudy and my thermometer is reading about 32 degrees. Tomorrow's going to be cloudy also with snow showers on Saturday. Low tonight about 20. The low tonight 20. Tomorrow's high about 23. And it's just going to go downhill. So, yeah, Traverse City. So, hello, Traverse City.
Hello, Traverse City.
Be back in Tampa by 3 o'clock in the morning, just in time to go to work.
Get on our jet. There's our company jet again.
It comes in handy.
It does. And here in Florida, it's a balmy 82 degrees today in Tampa, and up north here is right around there, a little bit further north of Tampa. Just a beautiful day, clear skies, a slight breeze. I mean, it was the day you get out there and hit the golf ball around, or you go out and just wander along the beach or whatever. It was just beautiful, beautiful day, and no snow coming Saturday. Again, a beautiful Saturday, all set for our festival Saturday. Another beautiful day.
Yes. Yeah, and you're going to have Dan Burr was going to be there playing light and classical rock and country from 12 p.m. to 4 p.m. Y'all are going to love his sound, and you can also participate in an informative wine tasting with Ron. Ron?
Hey.
Some applause, right? have a little fun and shop the many vendors that are going to be out there with so many unique handmade items and some brand names you have known for years. So check it out, WineFest, this weekend at Florida State's Winery, located 25241 State Road 52 in Land O'Lakes, Florida. That's 4 miles west of Interstate 75 off of exit 285. So check it out. And we'll probably have some more information during the show here. And we'll be talking to somebody, I believe, in a little bit. And, Ron, you have a few things that we want to cover, and we're going to have a little review here, I guess.
Yes, we are. We're going to go into Michigan. We're going to take 2 weeks to go to Michigan. That's why Mike's freezing his tail off up there, trying to get a little lay of the land. But because we had such a hard time last week with Massachusetts, trying to find anybody available, and it was very, very hard to find anyone available in Massachusetts that was at the winery. I called a bunch of wineries, and phone numbers were disconnected or not in the service, or they were closed down for the winter or for the months now of January, February, and gearing up for March, and all sorts of stuff. I tried to call some more again today to see if I couldn't get a hold of anyone, because I really have a few questions about some Massachusetts weather and soil and shipping, all the stuff that we always ask and we like to find out that we've established over the past few weeks talking to different states. And I got a hold of someone, Westport Rivers Vineyard and Winery. They're located in let me see, I will let you know in just a second here where they're located exactly. Westport River Vineyard and Winery is
I just had their website too, and I forgot where.
Yeah, I just dropped it down out of my way too. They're in Westport, Massachusetts, which makes it pretty easy to remember since it's Westport Rivers Vineyard and Winery. They're located in Westport, Massachusetts. And Bob is, well, Westport, Massachusetts, let me tell you about where it is. Again, we go back to Massachusetts, and Martha's Vineyard is out at the tip there, south of Boston, straight south of Boston. Westport Vineyard and Winery in Westport, Massachusetts, is way down in the southern part of the state, down just south of Fall River, southwest of New Bedford, and that area there. So do we have Bob on the phone? Okay, well, we're going to be getting Bob from Westport on the phone here and have Bob talk to us about Massachusetts and wineries there and all that. Bob and his sons actually are the ones that run Westport River Rivers Vineyard and Winery, and they do a variety of wines, traditional sparkling wine, a Chardonnay, Pinot Noir, Riesling, and other Alsatian varietals. Bob and Carol Russell bought an old dairy farm in Westport back in 1982, and the vines arrived several years later, as they say, as did their oldest son, Rob. And Rob and his crew planted the first vines in 1986. And the vineyard's grown into one of the largest of New England's many vineyards. So they've been busy. One son takes care of the vineyard, the other one takes care of the winemaking. And Bob told me he is the president. So actually the man.
He is with us now.
Oh, good. Welcome,
he should
Bob.
Be on.
You with us, Bob?
Yes, it is.
Oh, fantastic. I was just telling everyone that a little bit of your beginnings from your website here. 1982, you and your wife Carol opened up or bought an old dairy farm and converted it several years later to a vineyard.
Yes.
And
that's correct.
In 1986, the vineyard is operating, and you've been doing it since then. You want to tell us about Westport Rivers Winery? I mean, I already started it out on the brief history there, but would you like to tell us a little bit about Westport Rivers Winery and what you do and, well, anything you would like to talk about your winery? We'll be happy to listen.
Sure. Well, the biggest thing that to start off with is that we started off by looking at different places around the world where we could put in a vineyard and a winery, and we concluded that this portion or this region of Massachusetts, the southeastern coast of actually New England, is a very temperate and moderate climate. And so that we concluded that, okay, you can grow grapes here. And then we did our off-the-cuff marketing study, and the people in Massachusetts, they drink 16 million cases of wine a year.
Wow.
And so we said, oh, what the heck, we're going to be a 10,000-case winery. We just want a little bit of market share. Well, we made our first wine in 1989, and then we sold our first wine in 1991, and what we encountered is what I call the battle of disbelief. That was, what, you need to make a fine wine in Massachusetts? You got to be kidding. You can't grow grapes in Massachusetts. It's too harsh of a climate. So, you know, we spent probably a good 8 to 10 years battling that the battle of disbelief. And I think as it stands right now, we've been well accepted in the fact that fine wines can be made in Massachusetts. Right now, the way Westport River stands is that we have 90 acres of grapevines, all Vanifa, Chardonnay, Riesling, Pinot Noir. Then we have some oddballs, Gruner Veltliner, and we have Arcacitelli, which is a Russian grape.
Red, white.
And what's that?
Is that the last one, the Russian one, a red or a white grape?
That's a white grape.
Is it? Okay.
It's actually the sixth most widely planted grape in the world.
Oh, really? I've never heard of it.
I know. Isn't that amazing?
It is.
And then we decided early on that we would make two styles of wines, still wines, that's wines without bubbles, and sparkling wines, that is wines with bubbles. Well, as it stands right now, what we do know for sure that if this region were in France, we would be covered with grapevines because our sparkling wines have continued to prove that they are amongst the best in the world. And the Boston Globe this last year just stated that, hey, if you want to buy a sparkling wine, buy Westport Rivers because it's at least as good as Veuve Clicquot and half the price.
Wow.
Yep. And then also at the Atlantic International Competition several years ago, our sparkling wine was stated as the best in the country.
Congratulations.
So anyway, this region can grow great wines. And as a matter of fact, as our knowledge in this country grows of growing grapevines, we have seen an explosion of grape vineyards around the country. Matter of fact, there's a winery in about every state in the union. And this is, you know, like in 1960, maybe there was 100 vineyards. In 1975, there may have been like 1,500 vineyards. And now there's, perhaps 6,000 vineyards around the country. So what it says is that the grapevines can be grown almost anywhere. And what it is that it's not that you, how can I say it? When you grow grapevines, you're always going to have troubles.
Yes.
Even that. Okay. And even Napa Valley has troubles.
Yes.
And so it's not a question of whether or not you're going to have troubles. It's a question of how well you can manage your set of problems. And I can say that when we first started out, we had some difficulties growing grapevines. But as time goes on, we find that it's really quite easy to grow grapevines here. And in addition to that, we now use the technique of growing grapevines called vertical shoot positioning.
Uh-huh.
And that's where we force the vine to grow like a hedge. And it doesn't have many leaves on it. And it's minimal leaves. And what this does is it minimizes the moisture that's held under the canopy. And moisture and fungus are our biggest problem. And so this vertical shoot position has been an enormous enablement to us to easily grow these vinifera grapevines in this area. So that's an overview. I know you grow grapevines in Florida, but I don't know what kind of problems you guys have down there.
Same as you do, only we have Pierce disease to deal with. So
you have Pierce disease. Okay, that's an interesting thing. You know why you have Pierce disease? Because your ground doesn't freeze in the wintertime.
That's right.
And what we do is I kind of categorize wines into two broad sweeping categories. You have cool climate wines and you have warm climate wines. And the dividing line as a generalization is the fact that the ground freezes. That's a cool climate wine. And what that does is it kills off all kinds of insects and stuff like that. And so we have zero problems with Pierce disease. And in addition to that, cool climate wines, how can I say it? They are not as high in alcohol because we can't get the ripening that you do in the warm climates.
The sugar levels.
Right? Sugar levels are much lower. And the result of that is that our alcohol content is lower.
Bob, what bricks do you usually pick your grapes?
Generally between 19 and 21.
So that's not too bad, though. You're getting a pretty good level of bricks there.
Yeah, it is. But, I mean, it's nothing like 25 or 26, you know.
No, not too many people do.
And what do you get for bricks?
Oh, we'll be lucky if we hit 17 or 18.
No way. Really?
Yeah, this is on vinifera grapes. Now, see, we use a hybrid grape, a University of Florida hybrid grape. And,
all right.
and not the muscadine grape grows wild down here. I mean, you can get a lot higher Brix on that, but the vinifera grape, we're 17, 18, is a good level for us for those. I mean, it doesn't. We don't get a high because we're not getting the cool nights, so you're not getting that concentration of sugars into the fruit, and that's the problem.
Yeah, I'm surprised. I would have thought you got higher than that. California wines get pretty high.
Yeah, up 27, 28, even 30.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, they get so high, when you drink the wines, they get hot, in your mouth from the high alcohol.
Right.
Anyway, talking about the cool climate, you might be, strangely enough, you might classify yourself as a cool climate wine, because you have, what's your alcohol level in, around 11%?
12, usually, right
yeah,
around 12.
Okay.
Yeah. Almost all the wines, we settle in right around 12, give or take, a couple of tenths, but right around 12.
Yeah. Well, what we say is that we're a cool climate wine. As a consequence, we're lower in alcohol. We're higher in acidity. Our wines are not as complex as the California or the warm climate wines, whereas the warm climate wines are higher in alcohol, lower in acidity, and when they make up for that acidity is do a lot of the aging in oak, giving it tannic acid, which gives it some structure in the mouth, which would be the equivalent of acidity.
Right.
And we generally also say that cool climate wines are more food favorable, whereas warm climate wines are better, as set aside or sipping wines, not to be drunk with food unless it's very rich food.
Right.
And so it's just an education process that we teach the people when we give our tours around here.
The you say you have 95 acres?
Yes.
Wow.
We're the largest vineyard ever planted in New England.
Wow. That 95 is a big vineyard. Hand pick or a machine?
Both. We go through two harvests here.
Oh. When is your bud break and when do you harvest?
Well, bud break is around May, and then what we harvest is first harvest is in mid-September.
Oh.
And that's hand harvest. And that's all our sparkling wine grapes.
Uh-huh.
And that's when the Brix is generally around 19. We don't want a high Brix for technical reasons. When you make sparkling wine, you don't want a high sugar content. And also you hand harvest because you don't want the grape juice to break open and absorb some of the tannins from the skins.
Right.
And so you want to handle it very delicately.
What grapes are you using for your sparkling wines?
What's that?
What grapes are you using for your sparkling wines?
Chardonnay, Pinot Noir, Riesling, and Pinot Meunier.
So basically the classic ones, the classic grapes then for the sparkling.
Yes. Yeah, and we make our sparkling wine by the classical method, Méthode Champenoise.
Uh-huh.
And we don't call it champagne, we call it sparkling wine, for just respect for the French, that's all. I mean, legally we can call it champagne. I mean, you pick up a bottle, a $4 bottle of André, and they just boldly state champagne on it.
Yes, they do.
In any event, we make your four styles of sparkling wines. We make 100% Chardonnay, which we call Blanc de Blanc, 100% Pinot Noir, which we call Blanc de Noir. Then we make the Brut, which is the classical standard French champagne, which is 60% Chardonnay, 38% Pinot Noir, and 2% Pinot Meunier.
Uh-huh.
And then we make our Imperial Sec, which is 100% Riesling.
Wow.
Yeah, it's no question about it. These are steady standard performers for us year in, year out. And we do them vintage. We don't blend them and have non-vintage ones.
So all of your champagnes are vintage then? Oh, wow.
Yeah. And then we make the still wines, the Chardonnay. We do not make Pinot Noir. We found that we don't get a ripe enough grape to make a red Pinot Noir. And so we use the Pinot Noir for our sparkling wines. But we also make a rosé wine, which is used with the leftovers from the grapes that we use for the sparkling wines. Then we make a Riesling. We also Pinot Blanc and Pinot Gris, and then Arcazzatelli. And Arcazzatelli was a big surprise to us. We never, in the beginning, wanted to call it Arcazzatelli. And so we always blended it with Riesling. And then 4 years ago, we said, oh, Ness, let's call it Arcazzatelli. Well, we couldn't believe it. It blew out the door. I have to attribute that more to the wine drinkers. I think they're becoming more, courageous.
Sophisticated.
Yeah, sophisticated is a good word.
Yeah, most of them are. Your soil and the soil of Massachusetts in general, I know you're in a different spot, so your soil is going to be a little bit different than what you find in the rest of the state. But
I'll tell you this much. I think that's a lot of French stuff to make you believe that you can't grow grapes anyplace else other than France. What we know right now is that we can we have a very variable soil around here. It's a glacial outwash soil.
Uh-huh.
In some areas it's got very thick topsoil loamy, and in other areas it's all bony or rocky. And what we do know is that the rootstock has more of an impact than the soil.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. What rootstock are you using?
SO4.
Uh huh. Yeah. That's one of the five basic classic ones there. Yeah.
And we find that if we have a Chardonnay on one sandy soil with SO4 and Chardonnay on another soil with topsoil, we get the same kind of wine. The biggest thing is that impacts us is what we seek for tonnage of grapes per acre.
Yeah.
If we were making grapes or growing grapes just to sell grapes to wineries, we would probably be harvesting five or six tons an acre, because we wouldn't worry about the quality of the grapes.
Right.
But what we do is we actually drop fruit, and so we wind up with maybe like 3 tons an acre.
Uh-huh.
And that gives us the top quality wines that we're seeking.
All right, gives you a much better grape. Now, 5 tons, it seems to be about an average almost everywhere. But when you start dropping fruit like that, then your 2 and 3 ton gives you a much better wine overall, because you're getting a little bit more concentration of fruit and sugars and all that.
That's right.
What you got left.
Yep.
So.
Yep.
So.
Well, anyway, then let's get back to the harvest. We do the early harvest in September, and then for the still wines, we harvest as late as we possibly can, because we want as much varietal character in the grape as we can, and that's the terrifying time of year for us.
Yeah.
Because when the grapes get very ripe, they're very susceptible to lots of things that are detrimental to the grape. For instance, if you get too much rain, the grapevines take up all this water, and these ripe grapes, their skins are very tender, and they burst.
Right.
And when they burst, you get ants, you get yellow jackets, and you get fungus. And then that time of year, we're also very susceptible to hurricanes.
Oh, that's right. You're right there. Yeah.
Yeah, and so we're always looking at the weather, And, you know, with the mechanical harvester, we can harvest it the rest of the crop in about a week. And so we're always looking for the hurricanes. Then you also have birds.
Uh-huh.
And they love the sweet grapes. And so we're always looking out for birds. And we've got all kinds of bird-scaring devices around. And we find the most effective thing is we attract small hawks. Kestrels.
Yeah.
And when they fly around, everybody leaves. So anyway,
How about deer? Do you have any problem with deer?
Oh, yeah. They're a pain in the neck. And wild turkeys and raccoons and people.
You can pretty much scare everything away except the people. That's your problem.
Yeah. And interestingly enough, we have never had a problem with frost.
Really?
No. Yeah. It's absolutely flabbergasting. And that's primarily because we're very heavily impacted by the maritime climate.
Oh, yeah.
The Gulf Stream kind of sweeps by us, and it tends to temper everything. So we don't get we've never had a problem in the spring with frost. And in the fall, we have had frost. But it's a funny kind of frost. It's not the hoary kind of frost where it sends spikes into the leaves.
Oh.
It's kind of like what you do in Florida. You know, you spray the trees, and they get a glazing of water.
Right.
Well, we get a glazing also because of the high moisture content of the air.
Uh-huh.
And so that continues to surprise us as to we may get a frost that has zero impact upon the vine. I guess our biggest enemy of all is what we call a dry hurricane. And a dry hurricane is a hurricane that blows a lot of wind, blows a lot of salt water onto the leaves with no rain to wash off that salt.
Ah.
And that'll totally drop the leaves off the vine just overnight.
I never thought of that, but you attribute a lot of the good stuff to that Gulf Stream, but that Gulf Stream is what drags those hurricanes right up to you, too.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Well, we haven't had a hurricane for 5 years or 6 years now, so we always sit.
We're heading into our seventh year here without any major impact, so yeah. We're crossing our fingers, too. Yeah. The state, how does the state treat wineries in Massachusetts? Are they wine friendly? The legislation and all that?
Yeah.
Be honest.
Let me put it this way. When you sign on to a distributor in the state, you have to keep them for a lifetime. You cannot get rid of them, number one. And that's not the state. That's just an iron hold that the distributors have.
You're right.
Number two is that we have all these excise taxes that we pay to the state, and out of it we get zero.
Wow.
No marketing effort, whereas like in Virginia, they're super that way.
Yeah, a lot of states are very good about marketing wineries. Yeah, that's what I was wondering.
But then 2 years ago, we hired a lobbyist, we being the wineries of Massachusetts.
Uh-huh.
And we hired a lobbyist, and out of this just came last fall that we are allowed now to sell wine at farmers' markets.
Uh-huh.
And that's a great thing. Because now we can go out and sell to the people directly from us without having to go through a distributor. Not to say we don't need distributors. We do need distributors, but they're not our most profitable channel. The most profitable channel is when we can sell direct to the consumer. As a matter of fact, just today, the state had a meeting up in Boston that our son Rob went to. Son Rob is the vineyard manager. And they are now considering in Boston an all year round indoor farmers market.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And that's big stuff for us.
And it's funny because I just talked to Vermont, not Vermont, what was it? It was Maine. I just talked to Maine, and they just had that law passed not too long ago that they can sell at farmers markets.
Yeah, it's getting to be that the farmers markets are a strong driving force. And the fact that they're allowing the wineries to sell is finally acknowledging that, hey, we're an agricultural product too.
Right, yeah.
So that's been – so, you know, the state has been how can I say – they haven't been against us, but they haven't been really proactive for us, not until just recently.
How about a distributor? You say that you have to go through a distributor?
No. If we sell away from our own winery here – no, we can sell direct to also. Let me put it this way. We can sell direct to any wine store or restaurant that we want.
Oh, okay, good.
But what that requires then is that requires salespeople, delivery trucks,
oh.
You know, your accounting system and everything else like that. And I can say that that's probably no worse than selling through a distributor.
Yeah, very true.
So we sell through a distributor, and you know that way our wine is available throughout the state, which we can't do. We've tried it, and it just doesn't work. A big thing for us is now selling online too.
Oh,
and,
wow. Do you sell directly through Westport Rivers Winery online, or do you go through a wine cellar, like a lot of places do?
No, we sell directly online. Matter of fact, if you go and look up our website, westportrivers.com, we have a store, and you can order online.
I'm on the site right now. I see some of it. Online store features most of the current releases and
yep,
ship.
There you go.
So, can you have your all three licenses? Can you own a distributor's license as a winery in the state, though?
We don't have to. We can distribute directly ourselves. That's part of our farmer winery license.
Oh, it's part of the farm winery license.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's even better. That's that's a good thing.
So we sell in Florida two ways right now. We sell by by our store, and then we also have a distributor down there.
Oh.
And that distributor distributes basically mid-state Florida, not to the southern portion, and not to the northern portion. But we don't sell a heck of a lot through the distributor, but it's. We have a lot of snowbirds up here that when they go back home in the wintertime, they want to buy our wine down there.
Right. Yeah, we got a lot of snowbirds here that come from that area, too. I talked to a lot of people from Massachusetts that come down here during throughout the winter. And in fact, we got a lot of people from Massachusetts down here right now, especially down at Fort Myers, because baseball spring training starts. And
Right.
Tremendous amount of people come down from Boston to watch the Red Sox in the spring training. It's amazing.
Yeah.
Temperatures, your summer temperatures and your winter temperatures, what are we looking at on those?
Well, let's see. The coldest this year has gotten has been 10 degrees.
That's not bad.
No. And then the warmest... 98.
Well, that's so you're not dropping down below zeros and stuff like that all the time then.
No. But what we've learned is that you can get a grapevine to go to pretty low temperatures. What really impacts the vine more than anything else is the cycling. From let's say it goes from 0 degrees today and 70 degrees. 3 days from today.
Yeah.
The vine, it really doesn't like that cycling. But that, we don't get that cycling. We really don't.
Well, that makes a big difference then on the area. That, well, no, your 98 acres then, you don't have to worry too much about it. Plus, you got that cold tolerant vineyard too. Your vines are all pretty well planted for cold tolerance, so that's
right. Yeah, we've been very fussy about where we buy our grapevines from. We now know that we have a good source of the grapevines up in Canada, and those are cold tolerant, you know, Chardonnay and things like that.
Right. Yeah. So you are. I'm sorry. I just was going to go. You know, you are getting most of your grapevines from Canada then.
Yep. But what we are also doing is that now that we've got those vines, we're now doing our own grafting.
Uh-huh.
And because we get about a 5% attrition.
That's good.
Yeah. Oops, are you still there? I just hit the mute button.
Yes, we're here.
Okay.
Anyway,
go ahead.
Well, that's good. Your family, you have two sons, and their jobs are what?
Well, our oldest son, in 1985, he was an architectural engineer, and he was unhappy with his career, and he came up to me one day, he said, "Dad, can I join the effort?" And I said, "Sure, but you don't know how to grow grapevines." So he went down to Long Island and spent a year down at Villa Banffy, and then came up here in 1986 and planted all the 44,000. At that time, the first planting was 44,000 vines, so he put in, 8,000 posts and 2 million feet of trellis wire.
Whoa.
Yeah. And then, nothing in this business happens fast.
No.
In 1989, we had our first crop, and our second oldest son, Bill, was graduating from Boston College with what we call the perfect degree for winemaking. He was graduating with a degree in philosophy, and he couldn't get a job. So we said, "Hey, why don't you try winemaking?" And both of these guys are today doing the winemaking and vineyard growing, and they love it. Matter of fact, 5 years ago, we did some what you call succession planning, and they said, "Hey, you have Mom and Dad, we want to take over and run the companies." And so we said, "Okay, sure." And but they said, "Oh, okay, by the way, Dad and Mom, you're trying to make these companies too big. We're going to try to keep them small." And they said, "We're going to just also trim back our costs. And, Dad, we're going to let go of the bookkeeper and the administrator, officer's administrator, and you're going to become the new person."
Uh-huh.
And that's what I've been doing for 5 years.
Yeah. Oh, it sounds like you fit right into that niche very well.
Well, and my wife, she did all the selling and marketing, she was on the streets of Boston. And they said, "Mom, we don't want you to do anything. It's time for you just to sit back and watch what's going on." And so, but now she's starting to get back into marketing a little bit more by coordinating events and stuff like that.
Uh-huh. Well, speaking of events, you do events at the winery?
Yes. We have the most popular and successful thing is during the summer, we have every Friday night, we have a sunset music series.
Wow.
And this starts around 5 o'clock, and it lasts till sunset. We're there a little bit thereafter, and then we have musicians come in, and they play, so their backdrop is the sunset.
Oh, fantastic.
Which overlooks the vineyard. And we charge $5 a car, and the people come in, they buy wine, and they have their dinner out there, and they listen to music, and it's very much a family scene, and we'll get maybe like 500 people there.
Wow.
Every Friday night.
Wow.
And that goes from when to when?
It's from July to September, I guess. And then this year we're trying something new. We're going to have sit-down dinners in the winery itself. We feel as though that that way we don't have to worry about the weather. We're trying to minimize tent events.
Uh-huh.
Where the weather is always precarious. You know, you can get a rainstorm or a thunderstorm, and that will ruin the whole event.
Oh, well, yes, without a doubt.
Go ahead.
Oh, I just want to say, I was talking about your concert series, and you, are you catering it, or is that just on the hillside and people just come in, buy the wine, and sit there? I think I saw something on your website about catering, or when I called you,
we do have caterers. Caterers that come in.
Oh, do you?
Yep.
Okay, yeah. So it's nothing that you do. You don't run your own restaurant or anything.
Oh, we used to do that.
Oh, did you? No.
Oh, yeah. We had a wine and food education center, and we did that for about maybe 8-10 years, something like that. And we hired a chef who was the chef at Behringer Vineyards out in California.
Wow.
Her family was back east here, and she wanted to continue on in that career. And so we totally modified a house here and made it into a commercial kitchen and dining area. And she did marvelous things. But then she had a third child, and she said, uh-oh, it's getting to be too much for me. So she resigned. And we never really was able to carry on her tradition, so we kind of shut it down. But she moved down to Florida, as a matter of fact. What's Disney World, the town, Orleans. No, it isn't Orleans. Mm-hmm. What town is Disneyland?
Yes, what?
Disney World.
Orlando.
Orlando, yeah. That's where she lives now.
Oh, yeah.
Right in the middle of the state.
What's that?
I said, right in the middle of the state. She got away from water completely.
Yeah. And, we find that our most profitable channel is simply here at the wine store. We know that every car that comes down the laneway is, that's $60. I can be so crude as to say it that way. And it's mostly by word of mouth and by the signs that we have.
Well, I'm going to give you another opportunity to get it out there in a different way, and that's I want you to give me all of your information for Westport Rivers Winery. Give me your phone number. Give me your address. Give me websites. Give me everything. That people can get in touch with you. We have quite a few listeners to the program here, and I'm sure after listening to you, they will love to come and visit you this summer, especially during your concert series. So let's hear how to contact and all about Westport Rivers Vineyard
and
Winery.
Okay, well, let's see. We're located at 417, those are on the GPS system, 417 Hixbridge Road, that's spelled Hixbridge. Road, Westport, Mass. And our phone number is 508-636-3423. Our website is westportrivers.com. And what else do you need to know?
That should pretty much do it. If anyone wants to get in touch with you, a phone number, you gave me that. Was
501. We didn't mention, but we also own a brewery. Which is right around the corner.
Oh.
And, that two-thirds of the people buy wine are women, and 90% of the people buy beer are men.
Right.
So it could be a husband-wife thing. You know, hey, let's go buy some wine and buy some beer. And if you want to look up the brewery website, it's called justbeer.org. Justbeer.us.
Oh, okay. And what types of beers do you is there out of there? Are they dark? Are they?
Oh, we we brew a ton of different kinds of beers. Almost all of them are ales.
Uh-huh.
And we have Moby D ale, we have Horseneck ale, we have Flip-Flop. We just play, have fun with the different names of beers.
Well, fantastic. That sounds great there, too. So, well, really, you guys are quite diversified up there. It sounds like you got your hands full.
Well, you live in two worlds. A winery is more like artistic, and a brewery is more like manufacturing. But we're having more fun with making all these different kinds of beers, which brings a little bit of artistry to it, too. So,
well, great.
It is, but it is two worlds. It's a mind blower to go from one to the other.
Yeah, I can imagine it would be. Yeah. Well, Bob, thank you very, very much for calling us today. I really do appreciate it, and I'm glad you were telling us about Massachusetts. Like I say, yes, definitely.
Thank you for asking us.
Yeah, and everyone out there, when you're up in Massachusetts, Westport Rivers Vineyard and Winery, they're south of Boston. How far south of Boston are you?
Oh, 50 miles.
So an hour south of Boston.
Yeah, one other thing I just want to pass on to you.
Sure.
All the vineyard land has been permanently preserved as farmland. Never again can another house be built on it. And that is simply because we believe that we're godly stewards of the land, and it's not ours, we're just caretakers of it. And so we permanently preserved it.
Fantastic.
And so, yeah, that's the only one. I just want to pass it on.
Well,
okay.
Thank you. And best of luck to you, and thanks again for calling.
You're welcome.
All right.
Bye.
Thanks a lot. Thank you.
Bye now.
Okay.
And that was Bob Russell from Westport Rivers Vineyard and Winery, the president. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
Yes, we have quite a bit of information here on what he was talking about. That's and I never heard of Johnny Hurricane. But
neither have I. I've never heard of that.
That was, oh my gosh, I can imagine the salt water and everything getting on there and destroying everything.
Right there on. I mean, they're just right there next to the water. I never considered that, but I'm sure it would stir up a lot of salt water. That's interesting.
Interesting. And I'm on their beer site. Yeah, I'm on their beer site now. So just take a look.
I know. You see all the beers? I mean, unbelievable.
Yeah, quite an operation there.
Yeah. Check it out. WestportRivers.com, and you can, you know, it links to the beer site, and then. Also, or you can go right directly to the beer site, but it's a lot of different stuff they make there. So,
yep. And if you'd like to get on the program, we still have about 12 minutes, a little more than 12 minutes left. We'd like to hear from you as well. Give us a call, 646-727-3235. You have to wait until they grab a pencil, but call us anytime during the program. We'd love to hear from you and get on the switchboard, and we'll put you on the air. And so, are we?
Let me talk a little bit about Michigan here, since we're going to be covering Michigan probably over the next couple of weeks here. It was great to hear Bob and tell about the winery up there and about Massachusetts and that area, and some very great information. Again, thank you, Bob. But Michigan, a few things about Michigan. One of the things we always like to talk about is where it's located and a little bit about it. And state of Michigan, located in the northern part of the country. It is surrounded on one side by Lake Erie, on another side by Lake Huron, and on the another side by Lake Michigan. It is divided in two, the only state that is in two parts, two major parts. I mean, we've got islands and stuff from all the others. And, Hawaii obviously is islands, that's divided up. But as far as in contiguous United States, Michigan is the only state that is actually broken in two parts. You've got the southern part of Michigan, then you've got the northern part, the peninsula part. Southern part is actually where Mike is sitting in Traverse City. Northern part, there's only a couple, three wineries in the northern part. Most of all the wineries in the southern part of the state of Michigan. It uh, northern part of Michigan is bordered by Wisconsin on one side and Lake Superior on the north. And then the southern part is bordered by Indiana and Ohio on the south. But then they also have Lake Michigan, Lake Erie, and Lake Huron on the three sides. Big Bay comes in. Saginaw Bay comes in the eastern side of Michigan. The Straits of Mackinac is what divides the two parts of Michigan. A very wet state. I've been to Michigan, and you know, the thing that I remember most about being in Michigan, I was there as, you know, as a child. I think I was like 8 or 9 years old. My parents took a trip up there so we can just see the country. And I remember going down a road where on both sides of the road, the lakes were so big, or they could have been, you know, what, you know, even Lake Huron or Michigan or whatever. But the lakes were so big that you could not see any land all the way to the horizon. There was so much water in the state. It was amazing. A lot of water in the state. The state of Michigan has 83 counties. A lot of them are small, a bunch of little small counties, just almost in the southern part, just row after row of counties. You get up in the northern part of Michigan, you got the odd-shaped ones, but 83 counties throughout the state, with most of the wineries bordering on the western edge of it and some on the eastern edge, but most on the western edge of it, and the counties up and down that. The interstates that run through the state, I-75 is one of the main ones coming out of Detroit, running north. Going through the northern part of the state of Michigan, no interstates except I-75, and that's on the far eastern side of it. Everything else is U.S. highways. I-96, I-94, I-69 are all in the southern part of the state, Lansing being the capital, and it's located in the south-central part of the state. Detroit on the far eastern part, southern part of the state. Detroit, interesting fact about this, for all of you people who would like an interesting fact, Detroit is the only state in this country which is north of a foreign country. Only city, I said state, only city in this country that is north of a foreign country. Detroit actually has Canada south of it. If you were to go due south of Detroit, you're in Canada. Detroit is on the southeast side of the state of Michigan. The elevation in Michigan, not real high elevation. Most all of the state is down in, you know, 600 to 1,800 feet. Very, very low elevation. The lowest point in the state is right on Lake Erie, and that's at 571 feet. That is not sea level. You have to remember that the Great Lakes are not sea level. They are elevated. So the state of Michigan is 571 feet at the lowest at Lake Erie. The highest point, Lake Michigan, is up in the north section in the far west. There's a couple of higher elevations up there, one called Mount Arvon, A-R-V-O-N, which is an elevation of 1,979 feet, almost 2,000 feet, being the highest point in the state of Michigan. The rivers all over the state, lakes all over the state, major lakes. If you are a fisherman, Michigan and Minnesota are fishing states. You can get yourself some killer fish up there. I have been up there as an adult, and I've done some fishing, and believe me, it's some of the best freshwater fishing I've ever done in my life in Michigan and in Minnesota. So it's a lot of rivers and lakes running through the state, and a lot of water throughout the state, which I am sure will make a big difference in the humidity when you have that much water influence. There is usually a lot of humidity running around the state. The some of the larger lakes in Michigan with in the St. Lawrence Seaway watershed, that's, again, Lake Huron, Lake Michigan, Lake Erie,
and Lake Superior. In fact, Michigan is the only state that has four of the five Great Lakes that border it. No other state has that many Great Lakes bordering it. So a little bit about the state of Michigan there. It is a lot of wineries, awful lot of wineries in the state of Michigan. I have seen conflicting reports anywhere from 64 to 122. So I will try to get a definite count by next week when we talk about Michigan more. But Michigan also has four AVAs, which we will go into. American Viticulture is. We'll go into that more next week. Four AVAs for the state of Michigan, which is something. And Michigan has not only table grapes, they have a lot of grapes planted in the state. An unbelievable amount of grapes are planted within the state of Michigan. But a lot of those grapes are used for grape jams, grape jellies, grape juice. It is a big area for Welch's to grow grapes. The state of Michigan is one of the biggest in the country for Welch's and for grape growing, or for grape for using juices and stuff. They also do a lot of fruit wines. So Michigan is the leading state in the production of fruit wines, apple, cherry, stuff like that. So Michigan, little tease there. We'll go into Michigan even more next week. And because of so many wineries and so much about the state, we might even stretch it over a couple of weeks here. That's Michigan. And I'm going to let Mike, you said you wanted
to. Yeah.
Thanks.
I did.
Tell a little bit about festival coming up Saturday.
Yes, absolutely. Coming up this Saturday, February 26th. Mark your calendars. I'll wait. Okay, hold on. 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. That is Florida time. So if you're in Florida, make sure you're set right and you show up at the winery. 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. this weekend, this Saturday, for Wine Fest, where you can, you know what? I just flipped out screens here. Where you can enjoy live music. And plenty of vendors will be on hand as well with arts and crafts, home products. Let's see, we have handcrafted cloths and everything. With Don will be there, all kinds of different designs. Jim is going to be there. Nita with Gold Canyon Candles is going to be there. There's going to be, all kinds of different things going on at the winery this weekend on Saturday.
Let me interrupt you for a second here.
Sure.
Peter Benchley, the one who wrote Jaws, his niece wrote a book, and she's going to be at the winery Saturday signing autographed copies, selling her book and signing autographed copies of her book.
Well, that's interesting.
Huh. Yeah.
Okay. Very cool. I didn't get to that part in the. Is that in the letter or not?
No,
yet?
They didn't confirm it until late yesterday, so we didn't get a chance for them.
Well, this is an exclusive then for all of you listening to the show. You heard it first here, so there you go. Anyway, it's going to be a great day at the winery this weekend. You definitely want to come check it out, 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. And the winery is located at 25241 State Road 52 in Land O'Lakes, Florida. That is exit 285 off of Interstate 75. You go 4 miles west on State Road 52, and you'll see the signs there. Or you can go east from the Suncoast Parkway, from that direction, and you'll see the winery signs will be on the left-hand side of the road. And if you need any more information or you just want to call the winery and let them know you heard about it on the show here, you'll be talking to Ron and his staff at area code 813-996-2113. That's 813-996-2113. Or email the winery directly at cork, C-O-R-P, at Flewn.com, FLEWN.com. Visit their amazing website at FloridaEstatesWines.com. That's FloridaEstatesWines.com. And they'll have all the information on the website as well. You can also sign up for the newsletter, and you'll receive information and recipes and wine facts and everything in your email box by subscribing to their newsletter. And visit them on Facebook as well. And we can, oh, no, that stupid screensaver, I have to turn it off. Anyway, we have less than a minute. The winery is open daily, 7 days a week from 11 a.m. until 6 p.m., except major holidays. And definitely look forward to you visiting the winery and tasting the world-class wines at Florida State's winery. Ron, it was really interesting. I've got tons of notes here, and hopefully I'll be able to add this to the wine show page blog that we have on there. Thank you, everybody, for listening, and we'll see you all next Thursday as we continue with Michigan. And we're on.
We're off the air, but we're still on. Yeah.
This is the extended.
This is the extra. This is the bonus section here.
Yeah. Those of you who are listening to us on archives, you know this is extra.
This is extra. Extra. We got Treats for Troops going to be out there Saturday too.
Cool.
Something really cool. The other day, I was at work and I had a lady and her son come in. He had just got back from a tour in Afghanistan. He had spent a tour in Iraq, and he just got back from a tour in Afghanistan. And he saw up on the wall where we had donated to Treats for Troops. And he goes, I know them. He says, I got a package from them when I was over in Afghanistan. He said,
Oh, my gosh.
And I thought, wow, that is really cool. You know, so.
Wow. That'd be good to maybe pass along to them. So, I mean, here they are, and you can see the efforts and everything that is actually being put to use. So that's really cool.
It is. They are receiving stuff. So that was cool. Really like to hear that.
I think I'm working Saturday, but let me see what I'm doing. I don't know. I'll have to figure something out here. And I'm not going to say, I'll be there.
Your wife will be there. Yeah, sure.
That time will definitely not work. I'm working like 11 to 4:30 or something that day. That's not good.
Okay.
So if you can move it 4 hours before 11 o'clock.
Okay. Well, put that on the website right now.
Yeah. Right.
Because of my, we have to move this.
All right.
That'll go over.
Both people show up, you know. That'd be good. All right, so I will. We'll definitely put down Michigan for next week, and who knows, maybe the following week as well.
Maybe the following week. There's a lot of wineries. Yeah.
Hopefully, we'll have some people. Representing Michigan next Thursday on the program.
Yeah.
That'd be cool.
I'll try to get hold of them. Jump out onto the corporate jet and get back here. You got to work in the morning.
Yes, I do. 3 o'clock, I got to get up. So I will. You have a good wine fest, and we'll talk to you definitely next week or something.
Talk to you next week.
Okay.
Be careful.
Have a good one. Thanks a lot, Ron.
All right, thank you.
All right, take it easy.
Yeah,
you listeners, thank you for listening.
Thanks, everyone. Bye.